Margo has received grants from the Ford Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and she has been a judge for the National Endowment for the Arts, and also the Presidential Commission on the Arts. Her publications include, has been in Essence Magazine, the Black Entertainment, the Black Enterprise, and the Smithsonian Institute. And also, Margo is the author of the book, The River That Gave Gifts, from Children's Book Press. She was the author and the illustrator, and this book will be used in the Children's Vespers this Thursday. Her current exhibitions with the United States Information Agency, the Tamarin Institute, exhibition representing the United States of America, touring 13 countries in Europe, the Exchange Exhibition in Berkeley and Bordeaux, France, the Kala Institute at the Jerome Fellowship exhibit. I mean, her list goes on and on. So it is such a pleasure to introduce Margo Humphrey.
Thank you, Tress. I'm delighted to be here at Holden Village. It has been a beautiful experience for me so far, and I hope that it will be until I leave. I also would like to thank publicly Tress and Will Hertzfeld for inviting me here to share my work with you today. What I've decided to do is to give you an overview of my work. I have a lot of pieces, and what I've tried to do is show you a little bit of the beginning, middle, and the end, and then we'll go back full circle, and I have some slides showing you the first signing, the lithograph that I did. I am an artist, and I concentrate specifically in the area of printmaking. In printmaking, there are several categories. There is relief printmaking, which is woodcuts, lino cuts. There is lithography, which is a planographic medium. That's the medium that I work in. And we also have the medium of intaglio, which is also known as etching. So we have those three areas. I decided to go into lithography. I also have a degree in painting as well, but I decided to go into lithography because there are thousands of painters, and I figured I'd go where the numbers were lowest, where my chances would be better, and I think over the last 20 years it has proven itself to be a wise choice. I'm going to start off with some small pieces that I did shortly after I graduated from Stanford University. I got my first fellowship, meaningful fellowship that I received was at Stanford University in 1974 with the Whitney Museum of American Art. I had a chance to travel with artists from New York, and not just any artists, but so-called the select few, and they were near great when I started, they're great now. So as a student, I had a chance to talk with them and find out about how careers ebb and wane and relate to women artists, which also became a big factor in the 60s. Women were beginning to come into their prime, and for minority women, we really needed to pay attention to this movement at this time and see just what the moves were and how to make sure that when something came up, we were right there. So I'll begin, and we will have a short question and answer period. I would like to say beforehand that I am here as an artist and not as a politician. There are some politics that enter into art done by Black Americans. But I do not have a degree in politics, and I don't want to get into that, any kind of combative thing. But there are certain ideas, quote unquote, that do come into my work because I am a Black person, and that experience could not be taken out of my work. Otherwise, the work would not be me. So there is that thread going through my work. Also, the work has a great deal of spirituality in it, which I was not aware of when I did the work. So you'll also see that. And it's on many, many different levels. So I'll talk to you about that as I go along. And do bear with me. This is all new and the stand, and I hope I don't fall over. So anyway, let's just see how things go. These are some little sketches that are only about 8x10. And I did these as soon as I got off the plane in New Mexico. New Mexico was beautiful. It's the first time I traveled there. And the clouds are incredible. I think the city of Albuquerque and Santa Fe are up about 6,000 to 8,000 feet. So the clouds are literally sometimes only about 100 feet above your head when you're just walking downtown to see this huge cloud kind of bombard your space. It's really quite nice. So these are the small kind of snatches of my mind's eye. And remember, audience, that I am talking to you in terms of an artist. So I want you to relax and be comfortable and put your mind in a very creative spot. If you haven't done any art in a long time, imagine yourself as a child in early kindergarten or school when you first began to discover color and crayons. I want you really to see the work the way I see it, and perhaps as we get to my more mature style, as we go along, you will kind of walk in my shoes, so to speak, in terms of the mental creativity that I go through when I do the work. This is a little watercolor I did of a woman I saw at the flea market, and all my brushes and everything are right at my side when I travel, and I keep a little special watercolor bucket on me. It's made out of plastic, and I can open it up and use it at any time. It fits right around my waist, the way these new backpack money pouches do when you want to travel through Europe or whatever. So that's how I carry my water. It's as important to me as money when I'm doing watercolor. No water, no pay, you know?
It's very biblical.
And here's another little street scene. The first time I laid eyes on a little adobe, and so I took out my little marking pens and India ink and did some quick sketches. You can see a sign that says Western Wear. And what I'm trying to do here is just to capture the energy that I'm feeling. Many artists use line that is not connected to any specific subject matter, so that it creates energy on the page. It's not static. I'll tell you a little bit about my style. I'm not a realist, obviously. You can't see all the little nicks and pop marks on the wagon wheel. You can't see the texture of the adobe. You don't see things that are drawn with precision. This work is about the moment. Remember, I'm walking down the street, I'm on the move, and gesture with a little bit of color. I even managed to get in a master charge sign up there at the top, and the air conditioner. So on these kinds of pieces, your eye has to travel all over the entire piece. At the lower right hand corner, you see a little small kind of crumpled image. You also see a little scribbling of my name. And there's a little animal down there that is a zebra. The zebra was very important to me in the late 50s, early 60s, because that was the time when there was a tense amount of black awareness in the country. And I'll feed in some of these other elements into my work as we go along. This one is a little drawing that I did. Let me see if I can focus it a little better. In Fiji, there was Samoans and Rotumans and Maori and Hawaiians and Hawaiians and Indians and the most beautiful mixture of people that I've ever seen in my life. And so I did a little pencil and tempera drawing of this woman or young girl walking down the street. And I had a little wooden stamp of a little monkey, and I stamped that on her shoulder. This is also a piece from Fiji. Went through an intense amount of culture shock there. First time out of the country, changed residences 3 times in 1 week. Millipedes, centipedes, and geckos all over the place, and wasn't quite comfortable anywhere. So I have this big image of one of those critters on the top of this house. But also the work is about something else at the same time, which is a formula that I use, not all of the time. It's also about couples and togetherness. And I have a way of mixing humor and a very serious statement at the same time. Because the way I plan my visual statements is that there's a way for you to have a universal concept so that everybody can get involved in the work. And then the individual and most poignant things that I'm trying to say begin to come out. And here's a couple embracing in a home and two trees on the side. It's kind of raining these marbles and colors and so it's about experience and travel and about lovers and loving at the same time. Here's another one. This one is pretty blatant. It just says, kiss me. And I have images on top of her head and an image inside of his head. And it's about communication. And I don't mind saying that I put a lot of my own life into my work. I think this is just before my husband and I got a divorce. So, he's thinking about going on a cruise, and I'm thinking about staying home. But again, it's also taking off from serious relationships and things that happen to you in the course of everyday living. This one's a little out of sequence, I would say, but this was also in New Mexico on one of the reservations. Just animals, pigs and chickens, as I walk through. This one is also about married life. This is as part of a series that I did called Cleo and Rufus, which is kind of an image for it used to be Willis and Margot. So I disguised us and put us in this work. And I have crosses on top of their heads because I think that each individual is blessed, is very special. And so these are two very special people, and he's got a conversation balloon coming out of his mouth. And Cleo and Rufus are meeting for the first time. This is kind of like the nice encounter. This, by the way, the pieces that you saw before are watercolors. This is a print medium that has recently come back into vogue again through one of the great printmakers of modern times, Nathan Oliveira, who is a master monotype artist and painter. And I worked with him in 74, and he introduced me to monotypes. This is done on a zinc plate that is smooth, polished smooth like glass, filed and beveled on the edges, and you draw on top of it with etching ink that is diluted with a little bit of turpentine, the way you would do a watercolor. The paper is then dampened, blotted, laid on top, and it's rolled through a press, and this is the image. I can't read it. I think it's called Part of the Cardboard Theater. And this was an image that is also a monotype, but I was doing this for a lithograph. It never got to be a lithograph, so I just left it as a monotype. This is called The Preacher Teacher. And don't take offense, Hertzville. This is it's about heroes that in our culture. The church is really a place to meet and to talk about issues, and many important issues center around the church. And it's called the preacher teacher because I'm seeing the preacher as a hero. And this was done a few years back. This is also from Fiji, a piece that I call Chicken on the Beach. It's actually from something that I actually saw. Lovers and Animals, Fiji. If you've never been there, it is one of the garden spots of Micronesia. It is a beautiful, beautiful place to visit. Here again, this is a monotype. The black that you see around the square in the center is a piece of Shincole Chinese foil. But in order to photograph it, we had to photograph it down so it doesn't reflect silver. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to see the slide very well. But it is a bright silver piece of paper. And this is one of my favorite monotypes. This is one of my sons and I on the road in Fiji, and that's me driving my little Volkswagen, and he's signaling, and the wheels are on the opposite side, so he's signaling for me. And then we have like a little double print on the bottom where there's a little conversation going on in truck. This is a piece that was done from magazine ads. And this is at a time when black women were very much concerned about beauty and how we looked to ourselves and how we looked to the rest of the world. And it was during the time of black awareness. And so I did a piece about all the different ways that you can present yourself, which also is not just something on the surface, but it's also psychological for everyone in terms of how we project, how we look and look and how we project to other people. And it's not about the wig you wear or about your hair. And so I have these funny names like Blonde and Silly Fool'em, Baby Fool'em, Braids of Heaven, The Flip, The Honey Bun, and all of these different kind of disguises. But in the center, I'm not sure if you can make it out, there's also a piece of foil, and it says the real you. The real you is in the center, and all of these other accoutrements are really not necessary. And this piece is called Mirror Talk in Wigland. This was done while I was working at UC Santa Cruz. It's a little garish, but not really, in the sense that Santa Cruz has a huge boardwalk, and there's all kinds of mirrors and squiggly things that distort. And so this is kind of about distortion and an image, and I'm not sure what I was trying to say. Sometimes the artist really doesn't know. It just comes out and we look at it, and if we like the artistic element, we leave it. If not, we throw the whole thing out. But I'm not sure what I was trying to say, but I think it's about being false. The person here has a mass, the body is very small, but I'm trying to emphasize the face, and the person has got on a mask and is leering, and it's not real. This is about happy times and being married. This is called Cleo and Rufus in Fun and Games at Home. And it talks about the intimate times that married couples have in terms of play and spontaneity and just enjoying life and enjoying themselves and just being a happy couple. This is called All Things Considered But Space to Live. I'm not sure if any of you are aware of it, if you know many artists, some of you may have artists in your family, but housing, I think all over the country in major cities, is a real problem for everyone. But the artist has a special problem in that if you're doing art past the age of 25, you really need a studio. Not only do you need a place to live, but the other part of your life that needs fulfillment also has to sustain itself. And artists desperately need space. And I was moving from one small apartment and had all my things in storage. I really needed the space. And so this is about that adventure or that saga or quest and the whole cycle of finding a place to put all of your things. These have been monotypes that you're seeing so far. This is one of the very first monotypes I did. I will never sell it, I love it. It's called Tiger Moon. And I did this in the studio with Nathan Oliveira. He showed me how to do monotypes, and the ones before that were all torn up, but this is one that I really loved. The symmetry, the tiger. By the way, this was done when I was in graduate school, so this was the posturing that I had. I needed to be a tiger in order to survive. So it wasn't a random choice in terms of using that particular animal. And there's the moon, and I have all this smoke coming out of my mouth, and so it meant that I was really determined to finish school. This is called the interior delivery, and it's just a dream. Being carried away by this, being carried away by this cat. We just bought one, and so it's just pretty direct image. Nothing weird, strange going on. Just a woman on the pillow having a pleasant dream. This is called Summer Madness, and I like to do things that are sexual, but not erotic. Things that. And it's very hard. There's a very fine borderline in terms of the taste and all of that. And so you have, this is like Summer Madness, Lovers on a Summer Day. I'm just keeping on a little longer. Pencil is kind of fine for you to see. This, by the way, is not a monotype. This is a collage. You can see the square shape of the house is rather pinkish. It's on a BFK, a paper made in France, and it's mounted on another whiter paper. The shapes that you see are painted first, and then they're cut out, and then I'm also using pencil and markers to fill in and make more directional lines in the piece. This is a collage pen and ink pencil piece called The Magic Theater, Almost. And there's me at the top, kind of manipulating everything, the people, the puppets on the stage, and then there's the audience and all the footprints and everything as they go into the, as they go into this theater to see the play. Oops. This is called The Comedy of Ways. This is also a piece that came out of taking my class on a tour through the Santa Cruz boardwalk with the mirrors that go up and down. And it's kind of like the dark side of yourself and the side of yourself that is outward and outgoing and deals with life on another level. Almost kind of like a, I don't know, a yin and yang piece, but mainly the dark side and the light side. This is a tribute to musicians, black musicians who play and make music. Music is such an integral part of our culture. We hear the rhythm and sounds of our great musical artists from early on. I know when my dad came back from the service, I had all of his records. I listened to everybody, Louis Armstrong and Fats Waller and everybody. And so this is, it's kind of some of that history that I had as a child coming out of my work at a later time. Some of you may not know that the work of an artist, a person who continues on for many years, art is not like any other kind of creativity. Dancers sometimes peak at 25 and 30. Baseball players, 25, 30. Gymnasts, what, 20 years old. In the arts, in the visual arts, the artist does not really mature, I guess until about my age, which I won't say, but it takes a while. You begin, I'd say an artist really begins in their early 30s, and that's really kind of the starting point. The interest perhaps will start as a young child, or maybe in high school or junior college, but art cannot be done really without life experience. The more life experience, the richer the art. So in some shows, I'm listed as one of the newer artists. I know there was a show in Fresno, California recently that had was called California Women Artists from 1900 to Present. And I was listed, there are three sections, and I was listed in the up-and-coming new genre. At first, I felt a little uncomfortable with that, but then I realized that it meant that I really had a future. I began to embrace that a little bit more. So artists, we mature later than other artists do, but it's really right on schedule. This was the first impression of one of the other first lithographs that I did, and I'm paying homage to the radio, and also, in a sense, music. That radio became a very vital tool. The music that came on the radio became a very vital tool for survival. And just a crossover point in terms of in many black neighborhoods on the weekends, you see kids, teenagers, young adults even, with huge radios. And the radio is not the radio, it's the music and the cymbal and that sound that is enriching, that keeps a drive, keeps your hopes up, the sounds of whatever is the sound of the time, the contemporary, what is the word I'm looking for? It's contemporary culture, and it changes very rapidly. The music of the 50s is not the music of the 60s, and I'm sure that applies to other cultures. But I think in black culture, music plays an incredible role in terms of even survival. I think it's even in our genes. We have to have music. So this radio is like a symbol of my needs and the things that I had to have for my survival. And it still is, by the way. And here's a better version of it. The first one was more like a rougher idea. And you can see that these have kind of a sawtooth on each side, as I had for Tiger Moon. So those two pieces will be in my permanent collection because they mean a great deal to me. This is an image that comes about all the time. I've been doing this image since the redevelopment in Oakland said they were going to tear our house down. And that's when I was 8 years old. So this image has been with me for a long time. And you can see that this house is flying. It means to get away. I think I have another slide coming up to show you a better version of it. No. Okay, I'll get back to that. This is a very important piece for me. This is in the permanent collection at the University Art Museum at Berkeley, California. This is called James Brown's Sounds of Escapism. And that was a record that came out in about 67 or 68, and it had the mature, I'm sure all of you have heard of James Brown, it had the mature James Brown sound when he was falling down and draping with the cape and get on up and the whole thing. And this was a record player that my grandmother had bought for me
when I was about 16, and I really needed music then. And I've got the music blaring out of it. The little red light on the corner is on, and it's just blasting out. This one was also in the publication, I forget what year now, but it was also in Black Enterprise magazine in their article on Black American artists. James Brown, Sounds of Escapism. This was called The Continental Flight, and this was one just about travel, going away and coming back, and little did I know that I'd be traveling a great deal. This was also, and that's even the flight of the plane that I was on, at a workshop in New Mexico on plate lithography. This is a lithograph. It's done on a thin plate. If you know anything about commercial printing houses, it's done on a very thin plate, probably about 006 gauge, and we draw on it in the old-fashioned way, and it's not printed on a press, it's printed by hand on a contemporary lithographic press. This is called The Couch, and this is also about lovers and loving. And whenever I do lovers, even though there might be some hint of eroticism in it, I try to make it as though that is, or express it in such a way that that is a union between two people that should be a very blessed and very special thing. And so I always have animals there because I'm reflecting back to harmony in the Garden of Eden and that kind of thing. So there's always animals and birds and little small images on the bottom are like dancing figures. And I'm also fascinated with scarification. And tattoos and images on the body. So a lot of the people that I do have stripes or some kind of pattern on the body. This is called The Trapeze, and the subtitle is, or the hidden agenda on this is, he'll do anything to get her back. This is a lithograph, black and white, 22 by 30 inches. There's the house again. It's a more contemporary version of it. These two prints, the first one and the second one are about 8 years apart. And it's called Once Upon a Time There Was a House. The tractors came and the house flew away. This is called Pencils from China. I'm sorry that the slide is a little blurred. This particular lithograph is not about subject matter. And in my field, which is very technical, very difficult medium, there's a lot of chemistry involved. What I didn't explain to you was the process of lithography. The process of lithography is done on lithographic stones, which are limestones. The limestones are quarried in Bavaria. They are cut all different sizes from about 5 to 8 inches, and they come as large as maybe 5 feet by 6 feet. They are usually no less than 3.5 inches in height, and they weigh a tremendous amount. They need to be grained either by hand with another stone on top. With in between, you pour water and silicon carbide, which is like ground pieces of metal. And you grind one stone on top of the other. It sounds like a huge mill until the surface is even all over. And plus, it also has to be level. Then the stone is drawn on with a greasy crayon. And the chemistry of this lithography is that grease repels water. And so everywhere that you draw on the greasy, draw on the stone with the greasy pencil, the water will not take to it. So therefore, ink is also grease, so that when you roll it up, the only areas of the stone that will receive the ink are the greasy areas. The other areas will repel it. We also have to separate our colors mentally. We have to know the process in terms of if yellow overlaps, red overlaps yellow, it will make orange. If yellow overlaps blue, it will make green, and so on and so on. So we have to know secondary and tertiary colors overlay because, listen, the most difficult thing about it is it's all done in black before we ever see it. So you have to have a very good memory and a feel for what you're doing because you never know how it's going to turn out until it's completed. So it takes a great deal of concentration and a good deal of experience in order to do lithography. It's a very, very difficult medium. This is a technical print. The characters on the right say pencils from China also, as does that little island there that says pencils from China. And again, if you notice in the lower right, you see that zebra again. Okay. So this was a very technical print, and I must say that the printer who collaborated with me on this hated me until it was finished. Really. This is a portrait. This is one of my favorite pieces. I love color. I am considered a colorist. Okay, that's about it on that. And I do black and white pieces just to make sure I don't lose my touch for values and that kind of thing. This is a thinking portrait. It's also a thing that I call my calendar print. At the top, it has my birthday up there, June 25th. This was done the year that I was in New Mexico on my Ford Foundation grant. So I have the months of the year, some elements in the background that deal with New Mexico per se. I have my little paintbrush over there on the right, giving me my little signature as an artist. And in the center is a thought process. And it starts off, I should have written it down, but I did not. It talks about sometimes I wonder what other artists do, what they think, how they feel. And I also talk about musicians. I think one of the great musicians around who's only on, he's died, is Rahsaan Roland Kirk, who played about, 12 or 9 instruments at one time and did it so well. He was a one-man band. But I'm just thinking about everything. I have notes up there about my nieces and nephews. Damon and Kim must be getting pretty big by now. I've been away from home for a whole year. Also, this idea came about. How many of you have been in elementary school where the teacher shines the light on the wall and you do that little silhouette and you paint it in? Well, this is a more, this is like the same thing, only like 25 or 30 years later. In the center, my thought process comes from a chili pepper, which I decided, which I decided not to make red, but chili peppers also enter into my work, and what do they mean? Well, my grandmother was from New Orleans, and we used chilies and chili peppers in Cubillon and in a lot of the Creole dishes that we make at home. This is an earlier lithograph called Many Fields Have Flowers. And it's kind of like an idea in its infancy. It's rather raw, but it's like women are the flowers of the earth, and they bear the fruit and have the children. So this was an earlier piece. There's just 3 colors. The drawing isn't that good, but it's one of my earlier pieces. What can I say? This is a later mixed media drawing called the Champagne Lunch with Voyeur. Mixed media collage, pencil, paste, cuts from magazines, watercolor, a little bit of everything in here. This is a piece that came from a sketch that Richard Pryor and Lily Tomlin did about 4 years ago on television. I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago on television. This is called Pyramids for Lunch. This was done with Richard Pryor and Lily Tomlin, and it has elements about the pyramids and the secrets that they hold. And this is a group of dolls at the table all trying to be real people, but real people on different levels, psychologically real, physically real, and just coming into who they are in terms of the whole cosmos here. That was the black and white version, and this is the color version here. And it says, surprisingly enough, everybody came. Knowledge of the old world would be restored by knowing the secrets of the ancient ones, the source of I am, to make them real and wise again. This one is called Pulling Your Own Strings, which is, I guess, a lesson we all need to learn at some point. I know I needed to draw on all my resources at one time and really make things happen for me and not rely on other sources. And I'll give you some keys. The hands, of course, are me kind of manipulating. The picture is kind of my life. It's contained in a frame. The water is like life, or the passage of time. And the platform with all the kind of squiggles is like a base. We all need a base with which to put our life together. That door there on top of it, it says the open door, that there's always a way out. And it's up to us to think about it. At the top, there's a lady in a box, and it's called Everybody's Dream Box. Everybody should have some kind of dreams. This is just my thing. I'm not preaching to you, by the way. But this is just how the idea came together. These are the elements that, so you can, what I'm trying to show you is that the artwork is not randomly selected. There are pieces that fit together that express a specific idea. And I'm trying to, when I do a statement, the statement is thought about for a long time. And this slide is turned around too, I think. So it's like the image itself has to take a while for me to formulate it, to make sure that when I talk about a piece, when it's finished and you see it, that it's about something. It has some substance to it. And I can get into it. If you want to ask me about something, I can really come back and tell you, well, this is what this is about. The woman is there specifically for a reason, because it's part of the universe, male and female. And they're kind of doing a dance and encountering each other, and a platform for life. And the airplane is a symbol of moving and getting up and going. And I do a lot of traveling. So it's like a travel, a little travel image for me. So there's all of these elements that go together to make this piece a whole. This was one done specifically after an experience in church. I went to a Baptist church one time with some friends of mine when I was a teenager, and I'd never been before. And she told me, let's sit up in front, and I said, okay. And there was a band. I never had never seen a band in church. And so I thought, wow, this is going to be great. So they had drums and horns, and the music was going, and the choir was singing, and the church was just, oh, it was really going. And this piece is about how I felt in that church. And everybody had fans, and they were fanning, and this lady was fanning. And something happened to me in that church, which is the reason I did this piece. Is because while I was in church, this lady came up to the microphone and she said, the Spirit will tap you on the shoulder and you will be happy and rejoice and everything. And I was saying to myself, mm-hmm. And sure enough, I felt something on my shoulder tap me 3 times. And I was afraid to look over. And I looked over, and all the people in the row behind me were singing. I looked to the right, looked to the left, and I felt something in that church. So this piece came from that experience. And you see I have the air, the atmosphere is filled with energy. I have the word spirit in the background, a kind of mysterious clouds there, crosses kind of in flight in space, and a fan and a person with no face, meaning that it could be any of us that get the spirit. This is technically one of the strongest pieces that I've ever done. This is called The Marble Box. It's about going in and out of life, enjoying life. The marble box is like the world with all of its complexities and colors and differences. I also talk about the passage of time as we are in life. The sun and the moon is a symbol for that. It's also a symbol for male and female. In the bottom, I have a couple in the corner. And the top of the box is more like the cosmos, and the two marbles at the top represent the moon. This is called time. Here again, I'm using symbols that repeat themselves in my work. I try not to be too obvious, but when you see them all like this, they repeat quite rapidly. Here is, the sun and the moon. I have a birthday cake. This piece is called Time. Here again, the water is an element of time. Birthday cake is kind of a Western symbol for time, marking how many years we've lived on Earth. On top of the cake is like a house, a place where we spend time, we live there. I have my banner on top, my little chili pepper banner. The ladder is the American Indian symbol for the passage of time. An umbrella for the symbol of shelter through life. Here again, the male and female figure. And it looks like I have the number 45 circled, but actually it's like that spotlight is on the couple in light illuminating those numbers. But the numbers on the cake are in sequence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The numbers in the sky are irregular and random. And that is about things when our rhythm is broken, like when you miss the bus and you're late for a conference, and how things kind of domino, how things don't fit in a regular pattern. Volkswagen and boats are like how we make the transition through our life, through time as we live it. And then things that we do when we're young. I also have some marbles there at the base of that ring of icing on the cake. So this particular piece is all about the elements of time. This is a church that is no longer around. This was a bad slide. A church that was a grocery store at one time called Church of the Living God, CWF number 16, which I thought was an incredible name for a church. And it was about pattern and imagery and just the cross and how it was painted. And I decided to do this as one of the very first lithographs that I ever did in school. This is called The Boy with Cow Feather, Open Field, Flugelhorn, and Crystal Ball, and Four Friendly Dogs. This is also a lithograph. I should say that most of these are in permanent collections throughout the country, the Grunewald and Los Angeles and Berkeley Art Museum, Oakland Art Museum, Philadelphia Museum of Art, and United States Information Agency collection, the Smithsonian and on. Here's the other portrait. This is not a portrait of me physically. Of course, I don't look like that. But this is a portrait of triumph. This is a portrait that I did after I finished school, graduate school, by the way. This was done not directly after, maybe a couple years. And I got into doing some photo lithography. And it's called Many Wild Beasts Inside. And it's about how I felt very strong and very positive when I finished. And I have this super, super large grin going. And it's like my secret. And here again, we have the zebra. I'll explain. The zebra was a symbol for me during the so-called black art movement in this country. I have been doing art since I was a small child, since the first box of crayons that I got. Then all of a sudden in the 60s, the art that I did and many other black Americans really had no specific label. If your name was Jacob Lawrence, you were a black artist, but your art, the work that you did as a black person, didn't specifically have any major categorization. Then all of a sudden, it was such a powerful movement, the black awareness movement in this country, that many of us creative peoples, many of them changed their name. Muhammad Ali and Leroy Jones, Amaru Baraka, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, and on and on. I had to look at my imagery again and decide on how I wanted to project myself and also maintain credibility with other artists who were doing different work than I was doing. And so the zebra, I did a piece that I don't have a slide of called Second Time in Freedom, meaning that perhaps the next time that we come to the fore that we will be free to do what we want to in this country. And I used a man on a zebra, or rather a boy on a zebra, to symbolize this. The reason I chose the zebra was because I had seen in National Geographic that the zebra is an animal whose spirit could never be domesticated. And I used that as the symbol of black America. And so that was added to my work as a specific symbol for me. And doesn't appear in my work as much now, but I still use it. This is a very recent lithograph. This called Midnight Rendezvous, or The Night Kiss. And this was published at Tamarin Institute in Albuquerque, New Mexico. If any of you are traveling through that part of the country and are in Albuquerque, you should go into Tamarin Institute. The work that was published, the work under my name that is published there, they will gladly show it to you. This was exhibited at the World's Fair Art Fair in Chicago a year before last, and it's called Midnight Rendezvous, or Night Kiss. And she's Miss Plus and he's Mr. Minus. And so opposites attract. So that's really what I'm trying to say. And again, I'm using a pattern on the body. And then again, he has the moon and she has a star. And I like those elements in terms of the universe. It's almost time for me to finish. And I think I have, I don't know how many more slides I've got. This is called Lady Luck, Say Come Take a Chance. This is about taking a chance on life. And there's a rainbow bird there. And the sun and all the elements of her being Lady Luck, and she's neither in daytime nor nighttime. The sun is shining and the stars are out, and she's in this place that we all kind of know inside of us, that we all begin at the same place and end at the same place, so we need to make the best of everything. This is the color step of The Getaway. And this kind of shows you how the lithograph is put together. Here you can see this is one color, this is two colors, or two runs, I should say. The orange blended run, which starts with orange to a medium yellow to a lighter yellow. And then you have the black key image on top. And that's how the work gets printed, piece by piece by piece, until the images finally come together. This is called the Collard Green King, which is also a children's story that I'm doing. Been working on for a while. This is called I'm Still Growing, mixed media collage piece. And here is The Getaway as it's completed. And you can see that I have disguised the blend so you can't really tell where the colors begin and end. me finishing a piece up at the Institute. I'm signing the work. The work is all documented in their publications at Tamarin Institute in New Mexico. On the right, almost out of the screen, is the curator. Her name is Holly. She is the person who hands me the work, and I sign each piece. Tamarin is a very special place for artists who specialize in my medium. This is the master printer and I. This is John. He's one of the finest technicians in the country, and pose with me when I sign these prints. Here is the printer at this time. This is Toby Michael. He's pointing out maybe some flaws in the print, that this one might perhaps be a reject, and that it would not be part of the final edition. And in the background, can you look on the left? You see a press? You see that slab? Mm-hmm. That's one of the lithographic stones that the work is printed on. And on the right are drying racks. The prints are put on those racks to dry. And you can also see the presses in the back, and the rollers and the other equipment that do the work. Here we are again, posing here, signing. And there's a bigger view of the room with one of the master curators looking down. And I thank you very much.